Hey team, it's Frances. RNZ asked me to come on to have a chat with Wallace Chapman about why so many of us choose lotto instead of saving. And I always love chatting to Wallace, so that's a big yes from me. But an interesting thing is that people always want me to break down the numbers on these topics. And if I'm honest, I don't think that convinces anyone. It's like putting the scary pictures on cigarette packets or calorie counts on food. We know. We just don't care. The trick with these topics, I think, is why we should care. Numbers don't convince us. They don't convince me, anyway. But imagining what life could be like and then working backwards to do what's needed to make that happen. Now, that is something I could do. That's something I could care about. So it was a great chat where we worked through all of that and they gave me permission to replay it for you here. So enjoy.
Well, how often do you buy a lotto ticket? Statistics show that New Zealanders spend a combined $700 million on lotto products a year. But the experts are saying, hey, it's smarter to invest. Hamilton Hendon Green investment advisor Grant Davies calculated that the outcome for someone investing $25 a week over 45 years at just over $58,000 with an after-tax and after-fee return of 4.5%. Compounding weekly, they would see their investment grow to $189,785. So the chances of getting lucky with a lotto first division are about 1 in 3.84 million per line, while the chances of winning a Powerball are a slim 1 in 38 million. So why do we keep coming back for more? With us, Frances Cook, financial journalist and podcaster. Frances, it's great to have you here on the panel.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
I think that many people would actually open their eyes at those stats. There's a lot of numbers in there, Frances, but can you give us a bit of a crash course in investment and this compounding growth as an idea?
Well, I think this is the thing, right? I think probably a lot of us have heard some of these numbers before, and I don't think numbers are great at convincing us.
Yeah.
So I will do some of the numbers, but I've also got some other things that people might care about a little more afterwards. Because it is the thing, right, where I think we all know that putting your money into lotto, putting in 20 bucks a week, and actually, to just dob myself in here, when I worked at university, I actually worked at the lotto counter. I was a lotto girl because it was a very easy job, and so I liked it. But people would spend hundreds a week, every single week. And I think we all know that if we even just put that into a term deposit, then you are over time getting maybe on average about 3% back on that. You've got the money that's saved. You've got the money it earns. You're going to be further ahead. Put it into something like the share market. Now, the New Zealand share market on average has earned over 10% a year. Take out taxes and fees, though, and that's why we tend to talk about that sort of roughly 7% a year on average that you, most people, would fairly reliably get. I think we know that you'd get further ahead saving and investing. But the problem is, right, lotto makes you daydream.
Yes.
They do a really good job at marketing. You know, if you ask someone, what would you do if you won lotto? Everyone has an answer, whether it's traveling, laying on the beach, buying a house for their parents, buying a house for themselves, you know, everyone has an answer. Meanwhile, if you think about saving and investing, you're not thinking about that as something that comes back to you. You're thinking, oh, I'm missing out on 20 bucks now. I'm just not getting to spend that on something fun. So we've kind of got it backwards. The thing that is taking 20 bucks away and not giving us much is the thing we daydream about. And the thing that could help us reach our daydreams is the thing that we feel like is depriving us and missing out. And so I really think anytime I talk about money mindset, people get a bit like, ugh, you know, it sounds so fluffy. But this is why money mindset is important. Knowing what you're saving and investing for to connect it to real goals is so important because otherwise some marketing guru will set your goals for you in order to take your money away.
It's all in that psychological cell, right, Francis? What would you say to someone then who, because you don't want to sort of, this is not about guilting, is it? Because as one of my producers said, it's kind of a little bit of fun money. But as you said also, there are people who do spend quite a lot on lotto. What would you say to someone who does spend, regularly on lotto about investing as an alternative?
Yeah, and I think the best place to start, and I do this a lot when I talk to people about money, is actually you can start with, what would you do if you won lotto? What does that daydream look like to you? That's actually a fantastic place to start with setting money goals. But then it's, okay, how can we work backwards from there and get you that without the lotto win? Because most people can at least do something to get a version of that. You might not be quitting your job at 30, but maybe you could quit your job at 50. I just talked to someone who did that. I mean, I talk to people all the time. That's what we do on Making Sense. And I haven't run out of people to interview for the podcast quite yet. There's a lot of people who make it happen. But it always starts with knowing that that's what you want. And when you've got that goal in front of you, suddenly the things that you need to do to get there are so much easier when it feels real, when it feels like you're moving towards something instead of just giving stuff up today. And so, it might be fun money. You might like a little flutter on lotto, but are you saving and investing as well? If you're one of those people who does spend $80 a week on lotto and you haven't saved and invested, maybe you could make it just the cheapest ticket. Back in the day when I worked the counter, that was $11. I don't know how much it is now. Yeah. But, get the cheapest ticket if it makes you happy and put the rest into your savings and investments and actually get closer to those goals.
I'll admit that every third or fourth shop our family buys a scratchy each, which is a dollar. It's been a rule not to really go beyond that, unless just a personal thing. But I'm just thinking, actually, Francis, of that $80 a week, and that would be a reality for some. That would go quite far over time, wouldn't it?
Compounding interest. Really would. Exactly. There's so many things you could do with that, even if you did just stick it into a term deposit. If you put it into something like KiwiSaver or investments instead, then that's incredible. I mean, you mentioned Hamilton Hendon Green and the wonderful Susan Edmonds, who you guys are very lucky to have her working for you, interviewed him. And he had $95 a week over 45 years. And that's $58,000 just on its own. But after you've got actually very low returns, nothing like the 7% I said earlier, you could grow your investment to just under $190,000. If you were getting 4.5% back, that's entirely reasonable. Whoa. That's entirely doable. Meanwhile, with the lottery numbers, I mean, I think we've all heard the stat that you're more likely to die from a lightning strike than win lottery. Did you know you're also more likely to be kicked to death by a donkey?
Okay. That says it all, right? Yeah. What else do you say?
Seem to go that way.
No, amazing. I'm with Francis Cook, financial journalist and podcaster. Are there any tricks? Is there a special trick or one or two tricks to investing well?
Yeah, and I think the thing is, one of the problems is investing gets a bit of a bad rap because, and rightfully so, there's all sorts of warnings trying to make sure that people don't sell you a pipe dream of, oh, you can get lots of money back and it's totally guaranteed. And nothing in life is guaranteed. But the problem is that when we warn people about that, we can also over-egg the warnings. We've also got, there's the possibility of a bank collapse and you lose all your savings. But is that actually likely? Not really. So we often say things like, only invest money you can afford to lose, which I understand why people say that, but I think it would be more accurate if we said only invest money that you can afford to leave alone for several years. Because if you invest into something like the share market, that's just buying a little piece of a business and you are now a business owner without having to do anything. Brilliant. My favorite kind of business ownership. And So that means, you know, businesses can and do fall over, but does the entire economy fall over? No, businesses keep going all the time, new shops pop up. And so that's why something like an index fund, which is a very low cost, very easy way to invest into hundreds of companies at once. It's usually managed by professionals. Yeah. So many rules around them these days. I know a lot of people got burned in the 80s. It's an entirely different world these days from that. So many more rules. The FMA really keeping an eye on these things far more closely. I mean, the FMA didn't even exist back in the 87 crash. So there is really easy ways. And I think for a lot of people, if you look into KiwiSaver, if you look into things like index funds, there are some really soft ways to start investing and to look after your future and to get ahead quite easily. The problem is we tend to just assume it will be hard, or we hear these warnings of horror stories. But, you know, we all go to work every day, and we also hear people who've lost their jobs. You know, life just has a little bit of risk, and there are ways to do things that looks after future you and current you. You just have to, you know, go gently, go easily.
Frances, a pleasure. Keep up the good work on the podcast. And hey, great to have you on the panel.
Lovely to be here, Wallace. Thank you.
Very good. Frances Cook there, financial journalist and a podcaster there. Look Frances up and always great to listen.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.